With the election just a few days away, many are focused on the national public figures running for Senate and Congress. However, are you looking at those that are running for state Senate and state Congress? If not, this episode is for you. I decided to sit down with somebody who's running in my district for a state Senate position to find out why would they want to serve in politics? Why would they want to be a part of this mix? What do they think are the major issues that are facing not just the state that I live in, but around the country? And hopefully this little microcosm is educational for everybody. I found that my guest was excellent. So sit back, grab yourself a cup of coffee or whatever it is that you're into. You're listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden on the America Out Loud Network. Welcome, bold Americans, to another episode. Today, I decided to do something a little bit different. I'm going to cover a politician that's running in my district. So my wife and I said, you know, we miss the people that used to come door to door in order to canvass for votes and let us know who they are. And this guest that I have on for you today, his name is Bill Alexander, and he's running for the 12th district in the state of Delaware as a state senator. And his team came by and was talking about him. And I was like, you know what? I would love to have a conversation because this is the way politics should still be done. We should be going door to door, not trying to rest our laurels on who may have the most amount of money to spend on a campaign, who may be the most flashy, but on the values. And so today I welcome Bill Alexander to America Emboldened. Bill, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing well, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you. Thanks for taking me up on my offer to come onto the show, because I want to have a conversation with you today about the microcosm of politics in the country, as well as the state of Delaware, where you and I reside, because I believe that this conversation will lend its hand as we approach the November 8th election to all the elections around the country, for people to get to know who they may be voting for on their state local level, as well as the national level. So I'm going to get started with you right away. I went on to your website after people described you at my door as a Ronald Reagan Republican, and I found out that you're an Army veteran. You're also a retired Delaware state trooper, so you served on the police. You teach at a college. You're a small business owner and also have a family, you know. So tell me a little bit about your career. Where did you begin? Did you begin in the Army?
So, yeah, I mean, out of high school, enlisted in the Army. I, in a nutshell, went to college, earned a commission while at college through ROTC, stayed in the National Guard system after my active tour, and joined the Delaware State Police. Spent 25 years with the Delaware State Police, retired as a captain, spent 25 years active and National Guard Army, and retired as a colonel. Back in 2013 or so, we started up a small business. Me being very concerned about highway safety, we do the defensive driving course in Delaware from a realistic standpoint for crash prevention. I've been a coach of many sports, mainly a baseball coach for American Legion baseball, 16 to 19 year olds. Always involved with youth, teaching religious education at my parish, St. Joseph's Middletown. I like to be involved in a lot of different things. I'm a facilitator of the Stewards of Children program, which is a program that those who are going to be working with kids have to go through so we can prevent child abuse. I've been involved in the Violence Against Women Act Committee at Delaware Technical Community College. So any good causes in which I can involve myself that I think are righteous, that are, you know, helpful to people, I try and get involved in. The, I remember I'm a big music fan, and there's a song from Pink Floyd back in the 60s called Free Four. And one of the verses in Free Four says, "The memories of a man in his old age are the deeds of a man in his prime," right? Yep. So when I'm a man in my old age, I want to be able to think back and look at the deeds in my prime, but more importantly, how they affected other people. So I'm running not as a politician. So Greg, you really didn't read the push card carefully, sir. As astute and attentive and intelligent as you are, it says right on the push card, a public servant and leader, not a politician. You called me a politician.
Well, you're entering a spot where you're going to have to get used to being called a politician. Once you put your name on that ballot, you have entered the realm of politics. And I commend you, because the environment in this country right now, in order to be a politician, I have to question people's sanity, possibly, because it's not the illustrious thing that you and I grew up, how it was represented in the past. It used to be an honorable position, and now it's one of celebrity type of culture and influencers, and people think that all people that get involved in politics are corrupt. And I think one of the things that when I was looking at your background, being a state police officer, you already know that police have been vilified in this country for the past several years, especially. And you've already been through probably having your name used by what you've done in your career in that form. I've gotten used to that conversation. So I'm guessing adding your name to the political realm isn't something that's really bothering you. You want what's just and what is right. Is that correct?
I think you hit it on the head, Greg. It goes back to what it should be and what an elected official, I refuse to use the term politician associated with me still, but what an elected official, what a public servant is what I really call myself as a senator, a public servant leader. I'm the voice. I am the voice. I'm the advocate. I'm the go-to person for the people in the 12th Senate District. I have their back. I will not make threats against people because they don't support me. If they don't support me, I still have their back. That's what a leader does. And that's what I'm going to do. So I can sit around at a picnic or, you know, having a beer with somebody or whatever, or around the coffee urn and talking about what should be done. Or, as many have suggested I do, I can actually make a run and see some real change and put things back the way they should be. The way I see it, it starts with me. And I know it's not just me. There are many honorable elected officials serving in the General Assembly right now. But, you know, there are many who aren't so honorable and who frankly should not be there, and they're not there for the right reasons. And that's my humble opinion. And I know from having hit over 8,500 doors, people will tell you, my knuckles are about bruised by now from all the door knocking. They feel the same way. They feel as though they can't trust, you know, politicians in general. And that's why the moniker politician is not something I really want. I want to do right for the people. And you really want to know why I'm doing it. If you want to call it self-serving, whatever, I don't think it is. But I look at my kids, I look at my boys, I look at my grandson, and, you know, my oldest son and daughter-in-law have one on the way. So I look in her belly at my next grandchild, and I look at all them and say, I want it to be better. I really want this place known as Delaware, this great state, to be better for them, instead of just saying, well, they're doing this now, they're doing that now. Well, you know, dad's doing this now, grandpop's doing this now, you know, Uncle Bill's doing this now, you know, my brother Bill, whoever, my husband's doing this, whatever it might be. Senator Bill Alexander is doing this now. And it's not for Senator Bill Alexander, it's for the people. And we need to get back to that, Greg. We really honestly do. And that's how I feel.
Yeah, I mean, so around the country right now, there's such a divide between Republican and Democrat. And I've often had the conversation with many individuals about, if we could just get rid of the labels, if we could get rid of Republican, Democrat, and get to the public servant of, okay, here's the issues that people are facing, here's the reality in the community of which they work and they're the people that they represent, we didn't be in such a much better position. Instead, we pick these single issues such as abortion, right? And the Democrats have been running on abortion for like the past 40 years of Roe v. Wade, whether or not there's fear that things would happen. And now it has happened, right? And so that seems to be their talking point. But as I said on my show just yesterday, I was talking about, what have the Democrats gotten done holding all three spots? They've had the presidency, the Congress, the Senate. And it's all talk. They haven't offered solutions. And so we do need people not playing the political game. We need people that are going to play the public service game and be servants to the people that elected them and get things done and show action instead of words and instead of talking points to earn the next vote, the next election cycle. So with that stated, you've obviously got your campaign talking points, things that you want to focus on. What are the top issues that you identified that are facing District 12, your community, as well as the state of Delaware, because you'd have a large role in shaping policy in the state?
Well, simply, there are many, many issues, but if I have to identify, let's say, four key ones, I would say these, not necessarily in order. I think they're all of equal importance. Certainly, we need to keep more money in our pockets. I believe that we need to improve our schools. Actually, I'll go one further. We need to repair our public schools. They are in need of repair right now. We need to reduce crime, increase the level of highway safety, and we really need, and this is almost going to sound ridiculous to say, but we have to make sure we maintain and preserve our constitutional rights. Now, why should we have to work to preserve our constitutional rights when Article 6 of our beloved Constitution says under the Supremacy Clause that that is the supreme law of the land? Well, you know, as I'm sure we'll discuss, our General Assembly here in Delaware seems to like to chip away at various rights that are given to us as citizens.
Yeah, that's certainly been the case. And what we're going to get into, Second Amendment right things that have gone on in the state of Delaware, being Joe Biden's home state, he bragged about the anti-Second Amendment features of laws that have been passed, three bills in particular, and we'll get into that in a few. Let's start off with the first thing you said, the economy. All right, we're in a spot right now where inflation is not just out of control in the United States, it's out of control throughout the world. The United Kingdom just announced that they're expecting double unemployment by 2025. That's how long the recession is expected to last. In Bank of America, which is basically their headquarters is Delaware as well as North Carolina. They have two different bases where most of their employees work. But Bank of America on their most recent report said starting in January, we will probably see a hemorrhaging of about 186,000 jobs throughout the United States per month. The Inflation Reduction Act doesn't seem to be doing anything. And from a local government standpoint, we have policies that have been able to possibly make us some money, and they continue to get voted down. And we can talk in maybe some things that might not be popular on the Republican side, like marijuana legalization, but it would have brought in revenue income in heavy ways. But I guess my question for you is what would you be your plan to help Delawareans first? And then as a state senator, not just with District 12 and what's going on in Middletown, because Middletown's a very diverse economic field, and District 12 goes all the way up to Old Newcastle. If you don't know Delaware very well, District 12 is an area that encompasses a lot of socioeconomic neighborhoods. It's very mixed as far as what people make. And so there's going to be varied needs for people depending on what neighborhood you go into. So how would you, in Bill Alexander's world, what needs to happen in Delaware to help fix our local economy first?
So, yeah, everything is local, Greg. I mean, everything really is local. All politics is local, many famous people have said, and I do agree with that. And, you know, in the 12th Senate District, which is, you know, obviously the absolute best Senate district in the state, and I say that with all bias, that's why I want to represent this district. The problem with the economy is a little bit bigger. I mean, what we can do at the state level is what I'd like to talk about. And I mean, can I, as a state senator, do anything about the price of bread, the price of gas, you know, or, you know, a gallon of milk, et cetera? Very little. I don't want to say nothing. I mean, we could submit a Senate resolution recommending this or whatever. But what we can do, though, is make it so these things that are higher priced are more affordable because there's more money in our pockets. So it's very obvious that we need to do something about our system of government collections known as taxes. Okay. Now, Delaware last year saw a $1.3 billion surplus. And Greg, you're a Delaware resident. How much money did you get back last year? What did you get a check for last year?
About $45.
$45. Okay. And some
people from the state. From the state, yeah.
Yeah, and some people got $300 checks as well. I know I got a $300 check.
Well, that's correct. I got $300 for gas when they said they had a surplus. And so they were helping us with the gas relief money that was approved. I do remember that. That's correct. So I got $345 total back.
Yeah, well, there you go. Whoopee, $345 back with a $1.3 billion surplus. So, okay, so let's keep that in our hip pocket for a second, that $1.3 billion surplus. Mm-hmm. Also, there were 6 tax cut bills that were proposed this past session or two. And do you know how many of those 6 tax cut bills passed total?
I'm going to guess there's 0.
Exactly. Now, see, why would you say that? I mean, a logical person would say that if we have a $1.3 billion surplus, that they all pass because now is the time to put money back into people's pockets who put it there to begin with, right?
That one would assume, except for the listeners that are out there that are from all over the United States, something you should know is almost every single elected official in Delaware is a Democrat. And Democrats love taxing. They love taxing because you never know when you might want that money to spend on your new pet project, Bill. So I believe that that's one of the reasons. We're obsessed with taxation.
Right. And, you know, pet projects, I really don't have a problem with pet projects if they benefit the masses or if they benefit people who truly, truly need them. I mean, people with disabilities, you know, people who actually need the money because they have to survive from it. I get all that. But in this case, there's very little explanation of where this $1.3 billion surplus went. But what I do know is that there were some tax cut bills that didn't pass, like just an income tax cut bill in general, that failed. A business tax break, that failed. And the two that really bother me, and I'm not in this category yet, but I will be, and Greg, you will be at one point, one for seniors, okay? There was one tax cut bill for seniors that was a $750 break off the adjusted gross income for school taxes. I mean, how many seniors have kids in school? I would think not many at all, if any, right? Grandkids maybe, but so $750 off the top for them. And that's pretty good. That did not pass. That did not pass. That was voted down. Okay. Mm. So then somehow they worked, it was $400. What they were getting, they wanted to up it to 750. Somehow they worked into the general budget. The sponsor of the bill, Representative Kevin Hensley, worked into the bill or worked into the budget somehow that $500 would come to them. But still, why did they not pass this bill, you have to ask. And then there was another one that had to do with the property transfer tax. Now, just so your listeners across the nation know, if you'd like to know the state that has the absolute highest property transfer tax in the nation, it's the state of Delaware. 4%, 4% property transfer tax. And that was supposed to be temporary, I'm told. They raised it from 4 to 3. 3 is still one of the highest in the nation, if not the highest. But it was supposed to go back. It did not. And this was the year to at least reel it back, and they did not. But what they also didn't do for the seniors, there was a bill that was going to allow seniors, if they wanted to buy another home or buy a home for their kids or something in their name, it was going to cut that transfer tax for properties in half to 2%. So they would only pay 2%. Now, that didn't pass. So when we start doing things that affect seniors, that bothers me because to me, I'm about seniority. I mean, seniority in the workplace, seniority in age, especially, you've earned something with seniority. And when our seniors, who most of whom are on fixed incomes, don't get tax breaks that they deserve, I have a real problem with that. And I need to be their advocate and stand up for them in the General Assembly. And I really mean that, along with my counterparts who will also stand up for them. So I have an issue with that. Delaware in general, Greg, is one of 32 states that has a progressive tax. So we have 9 states that have zero income tax, you know.
Right.
And we have 9 states that have something called a flat tax. Now, those 18 states, the 9 with the no income tax and the 9 with the flat tax, are the 18 most fiscally sound states in this union, seemingly year after year. Okay. So the problem I have with the progressive tax rate, it is such a hidden thing that when I tell people about it, they don't even realize what's happening, that it has been happening. So the more money that you make in a progressive tax system, your tax rate goes up even more. And you don't realize it's like, well, of course they're going to take more money out because I made more. Yeah, but they're taking more and more and more. Let me just throw some numbers out. These are not accurate percentages. I'm just using examples for the record. Okay. So let's say in Delaware, somebody makes $50,000 per year. And let's say they're taxed at a rate of 3.5% for the sake of argument. Now, I'm not sure what it is without looking at my chart, but let's say it's 3.5%. So this person says, well, you know, we want to put an addition on the house. We want to pay off this. We want to get a college fund together. We have some expenses. So I have an opportunity to work some overtime, work for my buddy who's a contractor. So that man goes out and works, so that woman goes out and works and makes an extra $20,000. So now they've got $70,000 they've made. They brought in that extra money. So you think, okay, that $70,000 is also going to be taxed at that 3.5%. Well, no, it's not. Now, at the end of the year, when you have to do your taxes, you're not just taxed at that 3.5%. Now you're taxed at a higher percent, let's say 5%. So not only are you paying more because you made more, you're paying more because the state gave you a higher percentage because you decided to go out and work your butt off to make good for your family or what you want through your own labor. And I don't like that. I've never thought that's fair. I thought it's unfair. So I fervently support a flat tax. I really do. I think it's fair for everybody. I wish we did it nationally. And everybody benefits from it, Greg. Everybody.
Yeah, there's no way to get around. I'm actually a proponent for a flat tax with no deductions. That it is, you pay what you pay. There's no deductions. It's the same equal for everyone. If we want to look at those in poverty, below a poverty level, and say that they don't have to pay taxes whatsoever, I'm okay with that as well. But there should be an equal share, whether you're a multimillionaire or you are in the middle class, wherever you may be, it should be an equal tax. And I do agree with that. We got to take a quick break here for a second, Bill. We'll come back in just a moment. I want to get to your time as a police officer and how we reduce crime, highway safety, fix our schools, talk about the constitutional rights and things here in the second half. All right, everybody, you're listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden, my special guest, Bill Alexander, here on the America Out Loud Network. Be right back.
Cold and flu season is here. Wouldn't it be great if you had a way to minimize airborne viral threats? Well, now there is, and it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray called Cofix RX. You might even say it's just what the doctor ordered. To reduce your chance of getting hurt, you wear a safety belt when you're driving. To limit sun damage, you wear sunscreen on the beach. Cofix RX is just like that. It's an additional layer of protection. It's sold by thousands of pharmacists and medical doctors nationwide. It's made right here in the USA. Again, it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray. You've heard them talk about it here on the Out Loud Network over and over again. Check out CofixRx.com. That's CofixRx.com for a retailer near you, or use coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off at CofixRx.com.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, We heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
The spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. Now we invite you, friends, to invest some of your time with our magnificent family of experts, their minds and voices. It's all back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, Bold Americans. We're talking to Bill Alexander, who is a public servant. See how I did that, Bill? I'm calling you a public servant now.
There you go, Greg. You're a quick learner. There you go.
I'm not using that dirty other word that you were using earlier.
Thank you.
I guess I was the one using. You were correcting me. All right. So we were talking about taxes in the first half. And yes, a flat tax is kind of where we ended that conversation. Many states could probably be more equitable. A lot of states are still using COVID as an excuse for a lot of their actions. Meanwhile, it was a lot of the government leaders and governor that shut down so many businesses that were small businesses, caused people to suffer through in the economy. During that time, though, one thing that we saw was our city in Wilmington got more violent, not just our city, but cities all across the United States, like Philadelphia. You mentioned one of the things that's important to you is reducing crime now. Wilmington's not part of the district that you would represent. That stated, as a state senator, you can set policy, you can make recommendations that could help our city in Wilmington, help Dover, help other places that are seeing high crime, shootings at a rate that should make people blush, of teenagers, young people being shot. In a Bill Alexander world, what common sense measures would you advocate for legislation-wise or supporting the systems that are already in place in order to help reduce crime?
So crime in general is going up. You're right. You're absolutely right. And, you know, you have to ask yourself, why does the crime rate go up in general? Well, why does anybody take advantage of a system of rules in general? And the most common reason is because of the lack of penalties, or the lack of penalties being enforced. So I'm all about second chances. I'm all about somebody made a mistake, et cetera. But when you give somebody numerous chances who has already been given opportunities to rehabilitate and they've not, or it's by itself a standalone, extremely serious offense, you know, a homicide type of offense or related offense, I mean, you just have to hold people accountable to set an example. And, you know, then let the Department of Corrections rehabilitate that individual so that they are no longer a detriment to society, and that, you know, that they become a productive element of society, which is the perfect scenario of if they are properly rehabilitated. But that system doesn't work. What's happening is on the front end, you're having bail reform with almost everyone, unless it's a murderous type crime, getting out by signing their signature. And that's unheard of. I know, you know, when I was a trooper, you know, when we would arraign people, video phone or take them to court, I mean, if it was a felonious offense or a crime of violence, I would say the majority of the time there was some sort of a bail involved. And now I understand that you sign your signature and you're out. And how many episodes have we had? I mean, open up the newspaper, listen to the news. How many episodes have we had where people who have been cut loose on bail have reoffended and harmed others? So that's one issue with it. Another issue is that we need to retweak some of the more serious types of crimes. like the child deaths in this state. You know, child deaths in this state, as of mid-August, the stats are at a record number, and we're on track to do worse than last year. And the, I believe it's called the Child Accountability Committee. They have pleaded with the General Assembly to increase penalties, but they've more so pleaded to recategorize these child abuse crimes in a separate section of the criminal code. And I would agree with that, because knowing the criminal code like the back of my hand, I can tell you that there are some of them that are all over the place. They kind of jump different chapters. And there's no reason we can't delineate a specific chapter just for them. I mean, we've done that for sex offenses. We put them in chapter 700. You know, I mean, the weapons offenses in the 1400s, et cetera. So we can put these child abuse crimes in there. And if that helps, and if that helps put them on the radar screen more and holds people accountable more, then let's do it. I mean, all it is a very simple bill to pass into a law. But there has been no appetite for it. And there have been statements by legislators, article in the News Journal, I think I'm going to say two Sundays ago, maybe, talked about this very issue and addressed it. Legislators were quoted as saying that this is not something the General Assembly is going to do right now. Well, somebody needs to write a bill, and I'd like to see them say no to something like this when it has to do with the safety of our children. If we can't protect our children, I mean, what kind of a society are we? What kind of a state are we? And I mean, that has to come first. And again, this is something that's kind of been under the carpet, you know, not on anybody's radar screen. So that's a problem. You know, and then you have the issue of, you know, just general crimes occurring, robberies, home invasions, burglaries, et cetera. And, you know, on top of that, you have legislators who want to take away the rights of police officers. I mean, we have the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights. And, you know, the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights makes it so a police officer acting under the color of law is protected. And it makes it so people who have walked in the shoes of a police officer are the ones who get to decide if the actions were right or wrong. And what taking away Lee Ober, the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights, does is it exposes police officers to sanctions that come from civilian review boards of people who've never walked a day in a police officer's shoes, never walked up to a motorist at a traffic stop, never went into a dark building warehouse at night for a burglary alarm. You know, I mean, they've never done this, and they can't really understand the mindset of the officer, but yet they are trying to, you know, take this away, including my opponent was one of the sponsors of this bill to take away the Law Enforcement Officer's Bill of Rights. And I would never do that. I say for the record, I would never consider doing that, knowing how important that is. And now we have a real issue with people wanting to become police officers because, as you said, Greg, some of the bad rhetoric that's out there about police officers. So I could go on, but I think all of the things that I named kind of make it a very fertile environment for crime to flourish.
I believe that, you know, because of the environment that we have of the polarization, that the pushback a little bit, I understand the police officer Bill of Rights, because I have family that's police officers. They've helped explain things to me where I'm blind in areas. When I do shows, I might get corrected and somebody will say, "Hey, are you aware of this?" And I'm like, "No, I wasn't aware of that." But the one thing that I'd say is there should be some type of way that citizens can have some oversight over law enforcement, and especially over some behavior that can really be educational towards the citizens in order so they can rule properly. Because one of the things about that I see with it is a level of transparency. And you've got to acknowledge, in even our local government, when you hear that something's closed to just the people that have experienced and walked in it, it lends itself to giving off an ideal that something wasn't transparent. So I understand where that conversation comes from. I believe what the talking point needs to be is, all right, well, then police officers should have a role in that review with the citizens, so that way it can be explained properly. But I would say that that would be the first thing that you've said so far that I'm thinking, I don't know if I agree with it completely from a transparency standpoint. I understand why it's necessary, but I also think it is necessary to have people that are not police officers. So that way there's no gray areas, there's no blind areas from society, and there's open and honest conversation and transparency on both sides. That all stated, like school resource officers, I work in a public school. I have an awesome school resource officer here, and I know that your opponent and other people, I don't know where your opponent stands on this entire thing, but I know that there are many in Delaware that would like to get rid of school resource officers. They believe that they are implementing racist policies and preying on students, which just is not true whatsoever. It's not what I see as a reality here at the school. I see school resource officers that, if anything, are trying to keep kids from getting arrested, tell kids how to, you know, be better people, helping to raise up the generation. It's been a very positive thing, as well as the level of security for our schools. I've been involved in public school work for about 7 years, but I've taught in various buildings and private schools and college over many decades now. I can't believe I'm saying that, but yeah, decades. And when I got to public school, it's the first time my eyes were open to gang violence. I had a student that was shot a couple days before Christmas. I had a student that had shot another student and killed the other student. And my eyes were completely open. Then I'm going, well, are we safe in our school buildings? I'm glad we have a school resource officer, because the fact of the matter is there's no metal detectors when you walk in. The fact of the matter is that most parents probably don't want to acknowledge is there's likely guns in school every single day, not because they're here for the school, but they're here for the gang violence in some of these areas where kids got to go back into. And I'm sure as a police officer, you've heard that and you know that to be a fact. I'm not making this up. But this is the reality that people don't want to have a conversation about. And you were talking about the state of our schools. And I think when you talk about, you know, reduction of crime and we get into transparency, I think we've got to talk about the repairs of our schools that need to be repaired because they're moldy or have, you know, health issues, as well as repairs in our school in the school districts throughout our state that may not be doing such as good of a job. And I'll probably get myself in some trouble as an educator for saying what I'm about to say. But Apo School District is not the school district that everybody thought it was just 10 years ago. It's an overcrowded school district now, because where you're going to be representing, it's one of the largest, fastest growing areas of growth in the state of Delaware. And as a result, the schools are overcrowded. The teachers are being told they have to stay on schedule and they can't back away. If they're like, everybody's teaching English at different schools, you better be on page 36 on this date and giving this test on this date. And so we need to repair schools from a standpoint of letting teachers teach again, in clearing out the classrooms and offering teachers smaller class sizes. Class sizes are running away in school buildings in some of these areas, such as, so without me continuing to talk about all this, my question is, what are the things that you see in schools as major issues, and what are the repairs? Are they the type of things that I was talking about with mold, or are they repairs ideologically? What are you looking at for schools?
So, yeah, let me talk about that, but I just want to backtrack a moment about the transparency.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
So I'm fully clear. I am 100% about transparency, and, you know, I have always supported body cams, dash cams, whatever, because I mean, you know, what you do, what any police officer does, if you're doing it right, that everyone should be able to see it. And to be honest with you, it actually benefits the police officer, these transparency things, so you can see how good of a job police are actually doing. So I'm all about citizens being involved and maybe reviewing what happened, but just not adjudicating what happened, because that would be like me sitting on a medical review board for a cardiovascular surgeon who nicked an aorta. You know, did he cut the right number of microns with the incisor? I mean, I don't know. I've never done that. And it's just like, it's inappropriate for me to be there on that board. It's inappropriate for anyone, unless they've been a police officer, to sit on that board because they've not done the job. But that doesn't mean they can't hear what happened. Okay. And that doesn't mean they can't chime in on their opinions of what happened. I mean, that's their constitutional right under the First Amendment. So I'm all about that, and I'm all about transparency. Listen, a community police partnership is what solves crime more than anything, and I'm all about that, and I hope to reestablish that. That being said, schools, what I mean by repairs, I didn't mean the mold in the water fountains and things like that per se, although if that's an issue, logistically, we should solve it. Yeah.
Yeah. If you haven't seen the report, there is lead in
water. Oh, and red clay. Yeah. I heard about that in some red clay in some other schools.
There's up and down the state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And certainly the logistics, the infrastructure of the schools needs to be safe for our kids. What I meant by repair is repair the system in general, because right now, when the stats came out about a month and a half ago or so, it turns out that 27% of our students in Delaware are math literate, math proficient, more specifically, 27%, okay? And as far as English language skills, they are proficient in English language skills, only 42%. So you have two numbers that are bad. One is worse than the other, but they're both bad. And they're both below the national average very significantly. And here's one that really bothers me. Not that those two don't, but SAT scores to me have always been the fair barometer of the skills that high school and college ready students are being taught. You know, from a perspective, that's just a national barometer. Do you know where Delaware ranks in SAT scores out of 50, Greg?
It's pretty low from what I remember, but I don't know if it was like 37 or somewhere around there.
Well, when you said pretty low, it was more accurate. We're 50.
We're in 50 now? Okay.
We're 50 out of 50. Our average SAT score, 975, national average 1051. We are number 50 out of 50 in the nation. And that's crazy. It's very disappointing, and that's an understatement. So when I say repair, that's why I say repair as opposed to improvement. So what do we do about it? Well, here's what I want to do. Now, I'm a college educator. I'm a former state trooper. I'm a college educator in my career that I'm in now. Retired trooper and then goes into education. To me, a great segue. But the thing is, I don't know K-12. As a state senator, what? Somebody puts a magic wand over my head and says, oh, now you can make policies because you're a state senator. Or somebody is appointed by the governor as, you know, somebody who heads up an organization that can make the decisions as to what teachers are supposed to teach, et cetera. Well, let's look at what background do they have. And I'm going to tell you, the problem is that teachers are not being allowed to teach, and the people making policy don't know. They don't know what's going on down in the weeds, what's going on down right down with the students in the classroom. So having the bigwigs, and I use that term, having the bigwigs say what should be done in the classroom is like, using a military analogy, is like asking, you know, a three-star general, hey, what do you think of the M4 rifle? How's it shoot? How is it in combat? Oh, it's pretty good. I shot it a couple times. Yeah, it's great. Let's do it. No, you got to ask the privates. You have to ask the sergeants, the lieutenants, those in the fighting positions, in the foxholes, using it, okay, and how effective is it? Likewise, you have to have the right people giving us recommendations, Greg, on how to improve education. So this is what I will do. And I have said this in my first initial days in office as state senator. I will appoint a working group or task force, if we can make it a task force, of 25 people within the 12th Senate District. And it will include the following: student-friendly principals, okay? Student-friendly principals, vice principals, guidance counselors, teachers, paraprofessionals, coaches, and involved parents who care, okay? Parents who truly care. And let's get 25 of these people together and even have task forces within them for different categories. And let's meet every month for 4 months, 6 months, and let's report back and let me know, what do you think we should do? Greg, that's who we should listen to. We need to empower that decision from that group. with great energy and change our system. Teachers cannot be required to teach to a test and expect that the teaching is effective. And they're worried about keeping their jobs. That's why they teach to a test. You can't do that. There has to be a better way. I don't know the best. I have my own ideas, but I want to hear from the people actually down in the weeds doing it. You know, like yourself, for example, you would speak more about what we can do to fix K-12 education than I possibly can. And I would listen to you, and your voice needs to be heard, Greg. I've already had a lot of teachers, principals, everyone that I just named who've said, put me on your task force, Bill, put me on your task force.
Yeah, and I'd be happy to help if you ever need me.
Well, that's what we do. That is exactly how we solve this problem, Greg, is we appoint this task force, and then we listen to them, and then we make policy.
And bringing the conversation full circle to the beginning of, you know, kind of why I wanted to speak with you, isn't that a microcosm of what it is in the United States right now? We have some politicians, and I'm using that word now, we have politicians that believe they know what's best, that their years of experience for the country allows them to know. And we're missing the human element of bringing the experts from the room. And this goes back to the state police thing that you were just talking about. I understand it. It's bringing the experts into the room to make the most well-informed decision. And so I like your consistency there. I don't want to run out of time with you, because there's a big issue we still need to talk about, because I believe it's one of the most important ones in the country over the next couple of years, and especially in the state of Delaware. And that's the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment's been under attack here in the state of Delaware, as well as around the country, with people that don't seem to understand the word shall not be infringed, even when they can look up the word infringed in the dictionary and see what that means. And we have a lot of people that try to hem and haw about what the founding fathers meant by it. Meanwhile, if they want to look at some of the other papers that Alexander Hamilton wrote and other individuals, they would find out that, yes, way back when, you could buy a cannon. It did give you the right to bear a cannon, those type of arms. So the people that say, well, you don't have a right to own this, this, and this. No, that's not what that states. It states you have the right to bear arms, should not be infringed. And in the state of Delaware, it takes it one step further than the federal constitution. The state of Delaware is more gun friendly than possibly any other state. Despite that, the Democrats have managed to put in, you cannot own a firearm until you're 21. They've managed to put in a law that to me is just ludicrous, of high capacity magazines. That if you have more than a certain type of plate on the bottom of your magazine, or if it can carry, I don't know, I think it's 17 was the number they finally ended up on. But if you are a concealed carry holder, which I happen to be, then I don't have to obey it. Now, you cannot have rules for one class of people and not rules for another class of people. You can't have this. They're either citizen rights or they're not citizen rights. So my question for you is, are you a strong supporter of Second Amendment rights if you were to be elected? And where would you stand on that?
Well, being a constitutionalist, I can tell you I am a supporter of the First Amendment, Second Amendment, Third, Fourth, Fifth, Sixth, all the way down the list. And, you know, because that is what we are supposed to be doing, that is kind of the bedrock of our society, are those rights that we have. You know, that's what keeps us from being a Gestapo state, okay, these constitutional rights that we have. And, you know, there are many, many reasons for the Second Amendment that we don't have time to get into, one of which is, you know, if we didn't have an armed citizenry in World War II, I learned it was very likely that the Japanese, not only did they attack Pearl Harbor, that they were going to attack the West Coast, California, Oregon, Washington, and come in, but they were worried. The heads of state of Japan said at the time, after the war, they said, hey, we didn't do that because we thought that the armed citizens would crop up with their firearms. And, you know, so there is something to be said about that. I know the naysayers would say, yeah, but this is the year 2022. Does that matter? I mean, and the thing is, our Constitution is what it is. We have some laws that protect, you know, potentially rogue gun owners. I mean, people who have felonies on their record, people who have crimes of violence on their record, people who have been involuntarily committed to a mental institution, okay, a psychiatric facility. I get that, okay? So, and then we have red flag laws, you know, that were written in partnership with some, even some gun rights groups. So we have everything in place to take away the right to own a firearm just because it appears to look dangerous. And, you know, some of these legislators, I won't name names, but don't even know what AR stands for. They stood up and said, well, assault rifle, AR.
Right.
That's not what it means. It's Armalite. And the fact of the matter is, an AR-15, one of which I own, you know, it's light. It's easy. It's so much easier than another type of rifle that's three times heavier. It's easier for target shooting. It's easier for hunting. And for a legislator, the sponsor of this bill to say, well, AR-15s aren't meant for target shooting or hunting. What world are you living in? I mean, what else do you do with it? I mean,
well, that's the problem. We've had lobbyists come in, like Moms Demand Action, into the state of Delaware, and I'm sure they've come in all over the United States after the school shootings and everything else. And the problem that I have is there's this moral bankruptcy. That's what I like to call it, a moral bankruptcy of politicians, that after the school shootings, they all come in on their white horse to say, I'm going to help make us safer by imposing these gun restrictions. Meanwhile, the entire time in the city that is only a few miles away from them, there are children bleeding out in the streets, and they do nothing week after week. They don't address the gun violence. They don't address it because that's acceptable loss. And it's racist for the very people that say, oh, that's racist. No, it's racist to turn a blind eye to the Black community in Wilmington, in gang violence that's dying at an exuberant rate in the state of Delaware, and do nothing about it until there's a school shooting in Uvalde, Texas, and all of a sudden, oh, we better take away some gun rights in the state to make the place safer. That's not who's doing the shooting right now. We have a gang war in our state. We have about 15 gangs up and down the state of Delaware. We have drug trade that comes up from Florida to New York City through the I-95 corridor. I don't have to tell you all this. You've been a state police officer for 25 years.
All that you're saying is, so what does the mom or the dad, the head of family, what do they have to defend themselves with if gun rights are being taken away?
I brought that up. That one of the bills is, you know, they have to put in $400 in order to take a class, another $300 to register, do all these things to qualify in order to purchase a firearm. And I said, well, that person that just got a part of domestic violence that's already in poverty, they're not going to have these fees. And that might be a life or death decision for
them. That's
right. That's, you know, right. That's the reality of the conversation. And people that listen to my show know I don't get caught up in the warfare between Democrats and Republicans. But when it comes to my Constitution, I will defend it left and right every single day.
Amen.
And make sure that no Democrat gets in my way of the constitutional rights of free speech. It's part of this podcast. What I can and can't say, go ahead and cancel me all you want. I got my Constitution behind me. And it goes for all the amendments. I will protect each and every person's equally. And I think it's so important. I'm glad to hear that the Constitution is something that matters to you as well. We're going to wrap up a little bit in the conversation, Bill, and I appreciate you coming on. I hope that for listeners, you know, this is the reason I have Bill on is he's just the guy running in my district. It could have been anybody that had come to my house, quite honestly, that I would have invited on, because I wanted this as the microcosm conversation. Maybe you took some things away that will help you as you get, you know, the next few days away to November 8th to make your vote. Bill, what should people be doing, not just for you, but for all living throughout Delaware and throughout the United States? How should they be educating themselves right now before they go to the ballot box? What would you want of a voter for you to be doing in order to make sure they make that right decision and they're well-informed? What are the steps that you recommend?
Research the candidates, Greg. I mean, absolutely. You have a lot of great resources. The League of Women Voters, vote 411, I believe it's called, .org, is an excellent resource. I have filled out everything on there that shows what needs to be done. And that is a great site. Then you have Active Vote is one that's actually kind of an interactive one where it asks you questions about what you believe and it kind of picks the candidate you lean toward. I mean, that's a good one. Then you have Ballotopedia is a good one. I've filled out all the info for that one. And there are lots of them out there. I've named a few, but the bottom line is do the research. And you know something, email your candidates, email them, call them. Every night I am up as late as I can be out of respect for people, answering calls, answering texts, answering emails. And people are in need, Greg, in this district. They really are. People don't understand some things. They've been told some things that are wrong, and you know, they need to understand what is right. They need to understand that a candidate who they elect is supposed to be a public servant and leader. It's not supposed to be someone self-serving. And I can guarantee you that when you do vote for anyone, it should be someone who you feel has your back and is not threatening to you, but someone who has your back. And I can tell you something, given my careers that I've had as in the Army and in the state police, I know what it's like to have someone's back in life or death situations. So I want the citizens of the 12th District in Delaware to know that I have their back. And I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, Independent. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter what party you are. I'm the ambassador for you, not the Republican Party. I'm the ambassador for the people in this district. And I want to do that for you.
Well, thank you, Bill. I appreciate you coming onto the show and just offering your voice and perspective. And hopefully that's helpful for others. So thanks for being my guest today.
Well, thank you for having me on, Greg. I greatly appreciate it. And I wish you well, and I wish you well in your research of the person for whom you choose to vote for as senator for the 12th district.
I will do that. I will do that very well. I love that because Bill knows that I have two choices and he knows he's one of my choices. That's great. That's witty, Bill. I like it. All right, everybody. That's going to wrap up another episode. I want to just say thank you to the listeners that took the time to sit here and listen to this conversation. I know you have many things that vie for your time each day, but you stuck right here with Bill and myself and listened to the conversation that we had. I hope that it was fruitful for you, and I hope that you get well informed going to the ballot box. Our country needs healing. Our country needs solutions. Our country needs people that are going to put public service first before their wallets and before becoming a politician. I like that Bill, you said that today. And so for everybody that's out there, I just hope that this was fruitful and November 8th goes the way that your well-informed decision will go. That's it for today, everybody. You've been listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden on the America Out Loud Network. Be bold, America.